Welcome back to episode 54 of the Guardian Project podcast. I'm your host, Andy, and Coyle, didgeridoo, you know that they just printed the best Minotaur commander of all time?
I didgeridoo know that, yeah.
Because you know the card didgeridoo?
Yeah.
The Minotaur artifact that you pay three to take a Minotaur from your hand and just directly put it out of the battlefield as though it were just summoned.
It's like it's been relevant for every legendary Minotaur that's been printed so far.
Maybe it'll spike finally this time.
Yeah, we can only hope.
I mean, I don't own one, but I'm going to need to get one.
You're going to need one. And I'm your host, Mike Coyle. And, you know, Talran Sky Summoner just saw another reprint.
Oh, I'm so glad we needed another.
Yeah, so if you include all of these set symbols and foiling and non-foiling, that makes 10 different versions of Talran Sky Summoner, which is still 6 versions short of Teferi Master of Time, brand new prints in Core 21.
Please listen carefully.
And this is a podcast where we talk about all things Magic the Gathering.
But mostly Commander.
And before we start, we want to thank our patrons. We appreciate all of your support. If you want to support, you can head to patreon.com/guardianprojectpod and donate at any dollar amount.
Yeah, other easy ways you have to support the podcast, whichever place you're listening to the podcast on or watching, if you're on YouTube, if you could drop a comment, drop a like, subscribe, we'd really appreciate it. We also have a TCG player affiliate link located on our website at www.guardianproject.com. If you can head on over to TCG player through that link when you buy your singles and sealed product, it helps out the podcast a lot and we'd appreciate it.
I think you left out the word podcast from our website.
GuardianProjectPodcast.com. www.guardianprojectpod.
Sorry, what was that? Guardian Project Pod?
Guardian Project Pod. Yeah.
Yes, GuardianProjectPodcast.com. I was like, as soon as you said it, I was like, hey, that's missing a whole word.
There's one word missing.
We've said it 50, no, not 50 times. We've said it how many times?
Probably 30 like times? 30 times.
Maybe 30 times we've said it. Yeah. Folks probably know, right?
You got to know by now. You got to.
And if you don't, now you do know, it's GuardianProjectPodcast.com.
That's right.
What is on our agenda today?
This week, we're going to talk about the Early Access Streamer event for Core Set 2021.
Yeah.
Andy was able to get a fully unlocked account. We've been playing that.
Thank you, Wizards. That was great.
We'll talk about some of the deck archetypes we're trying out. Andy did some drafting, so he's going to talk about draft and then where we think the meta might be heading with this new set. And then we're going to talk about some of the Jumpstart. Jumpstart has been fully spoiled now. We got some brand new legendary creatures to talk about as potential commanders in our format, as well as some reprints to help out the cost of some of these more expensive cards. And then Commander of the Week. Last week, Andy talked about his uncommon commander for the stream that we had with Tap That MTG. This week, I'm going to talk about my uncommon commander, which is Tetsuko Umezawa Fugitive.
Fugitive, yeah. And if you haven't seen that video, it was posted online today. We retweeted from our page. So Tap That MTG posted the video. So go check that out. And today is Wednesday, June 24th. And that is the day of the Early Access Streamer event for Core Set 2021. So I did... I did get access and we have streamed earlier today. I did a draft and then you came over, we played a couple of constructed decks. So we were going to talk about what we played, what we saw, how it's been.
Yep.
So the first draft that, I played, I read up on the archetypes. So there's, you know, red, green, ferocious, you know, where four power matters, there's blue, green draw. There's black, red, sacrifice. I ended up drafting black, white, life gain.
Okay.
So cards that would ultimately allow me to gain life, I really should have probably pulled up the list of the cards that I was playing in that deck. But it functioned off of a lot of cards that had when you gain a certain amount of life in your turn, your opponent actually loses life. Mm-hmm. So I had some really good games. I had some really, really awful games. There was a game where I just got stomped. I mean, from the beginning. But the first card that I had drafted was a multicolored card. And it was the card Indulging Patrician. So it's a 1/4 flyer with lifelink that says at the beginning of your end step, if you gain 3 or more life this turn, each opponent loses 3 life. So I'm pretty sure the first card that was in my pack, I honestly can't remember, was a rare that it was a black rare that lets you like search somebody's
Necromancer.
Yeah, I think the card was Necromancer. So you choose a card and you search somebody's hand, graveyard, and library and exile them. That type of or style of card is really not so fantastic in a limited format like that in draft. But I drafted a lot of cards like Revitalize, where you gain 3 life and draw a card. I think I had 2 or 3 Revitalize. Swift Response, destroy target tapped creature. Very, very good card. I played Rise Again, return target creature from your graveyard to the battlefield. I did not get it to happen, but I did draft the 1/1 that has lifelink. And if it enters the battlefield or was cast from your graveyard, instead you exile it and you get a 5/5 black demon, Archfiend's Vessel. I did get one of those, so that was really exciting. And I had the reanimate, so I said, well, if it happens, it happens. That's really cool. Like every other draft format, removal is great. I had Grasp of Darkness. I had 3 of them. So black, target creature gets -4/-4 till end of turn.
Yeah.
It removes a lot of stuff.
It's such a great card.
I got a Scavenging Ooze when it got to 4 counters before it was going to get another one. And the person was playing the green-white +1/+1 counter deck.
Yeah.
And they had out that creature that has, if a counter would be put on a creature you control, put that +1.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, if I don't do this now, I am not removing Scavenging Ooze. I will have no way to remove it. I think the best game that I had, and it'll be on YouTube. Actually, it's going to be on YouTube before this episode is released. So we recorded the full draft, that first draft. So I posted all of that, the deck building and the games online. There was a game against a blue-white Flyers deck, and 3 turns in a row, I was able to Grasp of Darkness their birds.
Yeah.
And had I not, they were going to have taken over the game. But I did end up winning. So I feel like the deck is worth it. I think we're going to probably draft once more later today, maybe go with a different strategy. I feel like I did try to force it towards the end. I was like, well, this card seems like it could be good, or this card is going to gain life, even though it costs 5 mana or something. But the card I didn't get to play at all was Sanguine Indulgence, where you return 2 creature cards from your graveyard to your hand for 3 generic and a black, but it costs 3 generic less if you gain 3 or more life. I think I cast it once, but I cast it for full cost because I didn't have the life gain.
Right.
So I really, really liked that. I didn't see anything that was super oppressive, which was really nice. But the best card that I did draft, and it did prevent a lot of damage to me, was Mangara the Diplomat. So 2/4 lifelink that lets me draw cards if an opponent attacks me with 2 or more creatures. It prevented someone from swinging at me for 3 turns in a row. They still won because they had bigger things than I did. But I got to play longer, so that was really cool.
Yeah, Mangara seems very, very strong. But yeah, I like that in a core set. You know, the core sets are typically a smaller set than some of the other box sets, standard sets that come out with. So your drafting environment is a little bit more refined, a little bit more streamlined. Like you can...
Is it smaller? I actually don't know.
They at least used to be. Core sets were always smaller than normal sets in the past. I don't know if it's still true today, but typically that is the truth. And you can, you know, stick with an archetype pretty well in the core sets. I know the last core set, Teemer Elementals was a really big theme and people could force it really easily. So maybe in this core set, you'll be able to force either, again, the uncommon cards are the ones that really show what your themes are going to be, whether it's reanimator or life gain.
Yeah.
So yeah, it should be a lot of fun. I plan on doing some core 21 drafting myself, hopefully this week.
Yeah. I'm really excited. So that was cool. So we started out with the draft and then I found a couple of deck lists online. I was just looking around. I said, well, I want to be able to play some decks that are constructed where I'm playing with new cards that I haven't before. So a few of the decks that I had found came from an article online called MTG Arena Zone. It was an article published by After Office TTV. So the credit goes to them for these 3. So we played a Shrine deck. So it was our first foray into playing with Shrines.
Yep.
We played a deck with Rada. It was called Rada Aggro. When we get to it, it wasn't necessarily Rada Aggro. And then we're going to be playing one later today. It plays Terror of the Peaks and Veto Thorn of the Duskrows, but it's a Yorian deck, so you're playing 80 cards. So that one we don't have much experience with. But
you also had a mono white aggro deck.
And that's the one I want to start with. Okay. So that one came from Yoman 5. There was a 50 deck list published and said, you know, these seem really cool or ways to start, so try these out. So I played a mono white aggro deck. The video will be on YouTube as well. And it plays all of the one mana or one white mana, basically one white mana creatures. So you've got the Pegasus, you've got the Giant Killer, you've got, there's a couple of creatures that cost one white. You play a couple that cost like a generic and a white. And then at three, you're playing Basri Ket, and you're playing Glorious Anthem. So Glorious Anthem says all of your creatures get plus one, plus one. Basri, which I did not know was going to be as good as it is, has a minus two that says when a non-token creature you control attacks, put into play a 1/1 creature tapped and attacking that opponent. Well, I guess I didn't think about the fact that on turn three, you're swinging with six creatures, and some of yours have two power.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then if the turn after that you play Glorious Anthem, you're winning on like turn four, or your opponent is scooping. So I think I played the most games of that. I think I recorded three for the video we put on YouTube just to see how it goes. And then I think I played three more that I didn't record, but I was streaming to our Discord channel. So that deck was a lot of fun. I think Basri is a real card. I think Basri is going to, I mean, if I were to build a deck tomorrow, and this article or this podcast will be out tomorrow or tonight, the night before this comes out, I would put together a Basri deck because it's really strong. If you have on Arena, you have the wild cards. It's, I think there's four rares, four mythics. You're playing 20 basic lands and the rest is, I think the rest is all uncommons.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing Venerable Knight, the 2/1. That's the kind of, it, you know, it's so funny because I like playing aggro and then I like playing the grindiest, nastiest of control decks.
Yeah, we need to get you into mid-range. That's what we need to do.
You know, that's the one that I don't normally play is mid-range. So I really like that. And then after the draft and after playing that, Coil came over. And so we were both playing together. So Coil, why don't you tell everybody about how the Shrine deck worked?
Yeah, so this Shrine deck, it's a five-color Shrines deck. It plays three copies of all of the new uncommon Shrines. It does not play the rare five-color Shrine. Outside of playing these Shrines, so the Shrines have different effects. We have the Sanctum of Stonefang says that your upkeep, target opponent loses life and you gain life equals the number of Shrines you control. There's the Sanctum of Calm Waters, which is the blue Shrine. It says at the beginning of your upkeep, you may draw cards equals to the number of Shrines you control. Then you must discard one card if you decide to do so.
Always do that.
Always do
that. Always. I don't know why you wouldn't unless you were going to draw your deck out.
So those two cards are going to be, well, those two and Shattered Heights, Sanctum of Shattered Heights, I think are our three top Shrines for how we're going to win the game. So Shattered Heights is the red Shrine that says you can pay one and discard either an enchantment, or no, it's a Shrine or a land from your hand to deal three damage.
No, X damage, X is the number of Shrines you control.
Yes, but you'll hear in the video, we learned something new about the red Shrine every game.
It was pretty much, Coil's like, oh, that does that too? Oh, it also does that. Yeah. Oh, okay.
So the idea is every single one of your upkeeps, you're going to be hitting your opponent with a Sanctum of Stone Fangs. At every single one of your upkeeps, you're going to be refueling your hand with your Sanctum of Calm Waters. And then whenever your opponent plays creatures or planeswalkers down, you're going to kill them with your Sanctum of Shattered Heights.
Yeah.
Sanctum of Tranquil Light is the white Sanctum. It only costs one mana, so it's really good if you can get it out on turn one just to have another Sanctum. It can tap down your opponent's creatures. We didn't find that that activation was really relevant in the three games that we played. And then the last Sanctum is actually pretty nice since we're playing five color. And as you know, in standard, the mana base maybe isn't there. But for Sanctum of Fruitful Harvest at your upkeep, you add X mana of any one color source where X is the number of Shrines you control. So this actually enabled us to playing our red and our black Shrines because most of the deck revolves around Bant, blue, green, white.
Yeah, yeah. The Sanctum of Fruitful Harvest, and it's actually pre-combat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so at the pre-combat, there was one game where we were looking at our hand, and I was like, oh, I don't... And then I said, well, we have this, mm-hmm. and we'll have the one black mana, and then, you know, assuming they don't have enchantment removal, which, to be fair, I don't normally run when I'm drafting. But this wasn't draft, this was constructed, and I think enchantment right. removal is not prioritized as highly right now.
Definitely not in a best of one. In a best of three, yeah, you're going to see a game two and three. You're going to see enchantment removal.
So we played that. There was a game where we got all five of them yep. on the battlefield. We did win that game.
Yep.
But that deck is fun.
Yeah. Outside of the shrines, you play four of Teferi. You play three or four of Shatter the Sky. You're really trying to just control the flow of the game and kill them with your shrine pings at your upkeep.
Yeah, that deck was a lot of fun to play. Definitely a slow game. Mm-hmm. The way that we built it, the Black Shrine Sanctum of the Stone Fangs was the only win con.
Yes.
There was no other way to do it. So to back that up, you had Shatter the Sky to destroy creatures. You had Teferi Time Raveler to bounce things. Arboreal Grazer to put lands into play. But for the most part, you didn't have another answer, and Kallax was only there to basically minus to exile a troublesome creature on your opponent's side. It's entirely possible that you could get to that -7. Right. Very, very unlikely.
Right.
But
we found that it was, in a lot of cases, better to just discard Kallax when we had to. When we did our 3-mana spell where you draw 3 cards, discard 2 cards, or discard 1 enchantment, we found it better to just discard Kallax because we wanted the shrines and the lands in our hand to activate our red shrine. So Kallax might even be a cut eventually.
Yeah, yeah. I would definitely play this. It's all uncommons. It's likely that you are not going to have a ton of these. But if you have a ton of uncommon wild cards...
Yeah.
This deck is worth giving a shot, especially if you already have Teferis. But the mana base, like we said, it's a bit expensive, or it could be pretty intensive on your wild cards
for
because
sure.
It's a 5-color deck. So if you have all of the Scry lands and the Shock lands, go for it. If you don't, I would probably say this is not the deck that I would build because right. you're going to lose a lot of wild cards to build this.
If you are going to invest, I would recommend, and I know this sounds silly because they're strictly worse in my opinion, but you want to invest into the Temple lands since they are being reprinted in 21 and the Shock lands are going to rotate out of standard. If you're a historic player, oh yeah, go ahead. Unlock the
go
Shock
for
lands
it.
Right away.
Go to town.
Yeah.
So we really did like that deck. The next deck that we played was green-red Rada.
Yeah, Rada.
Rada. You know, mm-hmm. you figure, so you're thinking that the deck is, you know, all themed and built around Rada.
It's going to be a Lands Matter Rada.
Lands Matter, right? So Rada's a 3-3, one red-green for an elf warrior. As long as it's your turn, Rada has first strike. You can look at the top card of your library at any time and play lands from the top of your library. You know, solid. This was green red beat down, but you put Rada in it.
Yep, that's it.
That there I think there were two games we didn't play Rada, or there was one game we played her just because we wanted to say we played Rada.
Yep.
I don't know if she's worth it in that green red deck.
I think she is not. I pointed out at the beginning that we are running 25 lands in that deck, and I said it seems a little high for an aggro deck. But then we said, oh, but Rada's got that ability where you can play lands from the top mm-hmm. of your deck. Maybe it's okay. I don't think it's worth it.
The two times that she was out, the top card was not a land.
Yep.
And then you drew it, and then there also wasn't a land.
That's right.
No, no. It was, you revealed it was a land, but we had already played a land for turn because yeah. we played her on 3. I drew it, and then it wasn't a land. And we're okay. I mean, very reminiscent of Corso Krufix, I will be honest. That's okay. kind of nice. But you don't gain a life when you play a land.
Right.
So there is a difference. But she was outclassed by the other cards that you had in your deck. You're playing Bonecrusher Giant, which you needed for removal. And then by the time you got to the point where you had just extra mana and you could play either a 3-4 or maybe even 5 if you wanted, you really wanted Questing Beast.
Yeah.
Because Questing Beast is just crazy. And then we ended up winning off Questing Beast with Embercleave. So it was like, it was just playing a red-green deck, which It was fun to play. Glad we tried it out.
Yep.
I don't know if that's the build for Rata, so I would look for other Rata decks, and perhaps in the future we're going to see maybe more elves or something, or more lands. Oh. I mean, we know we're going to see more lands matter.
Right.
I would assume. We're going back to Zendikar, and they said they're not bringing back the part that people complained about the most, which was Eldrazi.
Sure, sure.
And they're going to bring back the parts that people liked, mm-hmm. which was the adventure stuff, which was a lot of the expeditions. And so I would assume Rata may have a home once we see more Zendikar cards.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be Rata right aside of Zuza. There's going to be some Broken Lionfall strategy in the new standard with Zendikar. And yeah, just in this current standard, I don't think Rata has a home.
Yeah, or at least from what we've seen. From what we've seen, it, you know, the aggro deck was really fast.
Yep.
So there's that. And then, yeah, like we said, there's one other deck that we wanted to try later today. It's a Yorian deck with Terror of the Peaks and Veto Throne of the Duskgrows. We don't have experience with it yet, but we're looking forward to trying that out later.
Yeah, it's actually the first Yorian deck I've ever seen that doesn't play blue.
It's Mardu Yorian.
Yeah, so that's it's very interesting. And the fact that it is a Veto combo deck with Terror of the High Peaks, and this 80-card deck is only playing two copies of each one, is a little concerning to me, but we'll see if it works.
Yeah, we're going to see if it works. So, you know, stay tuned, and we'll be live on our Discord channel. We are streaming this to our Discord channel to support the Twitch blackout. So some of our videos, like we said, are on YouTube. We will not be streaming on Twitch today. If you're part of our Discord channel, you've likely already seen that we've sent a lot of messages out, and then you can chat with us right in there. And then we did tweet a link to our Discord channel. Right now we have free access to our Discord channel since we're still in phasing out of the quarantine. Everybody's welcome. Sometime after the quarantine, it will go back to being just a patron reward for the first tier. But for now, everyone's welcome, and we would love you to join. You want to talk Jumpstart?
Can we talk about meta real quick?
We can talk meta. Yeah, we can.
Yeah, I mentioned this to Andy just because I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, with the Core 21 streaming, you want to promote as many of the Core 21 cards as you can. I know that Gruul deck maybe was a little bit different.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to quickly touch base on some of the things that you might see with the new Core 21 cards, synergizing with some of the old decks. I know we had, before Fires got banned, we had Jeskai Fires really killing the standard. They banned out Fires, and we saw for a little while there was some aggro decks, low to the ground decks that were taking over the meta. So are any of these decks going to see benefits from Core 21? Are we going to see different archetypes that maybe were in like tier 2, tier 3 that might move up to tier 1? One deck that I really like and I wanted to talk about was Humans. So black-white Humans, I think, got a huge, huge buff with simply Kitetail Freebooter. I think that's an absolutely huge card. Black saw really good removal with Grasp of Darkness. I think there's a good chance that you're going to see even more Lurrus decks than you did before, because returning Kitetail Freebooter from your graveyard every single turn seems really, really strong.
And Lurrus in the deck and not as a companion.
Yeah, I think Lurrus is kind of dead as a companion. In standard, at least. It just costs too much mana to get into your hand, and it's a little bit too limiting. You can play other three drop. I know Bassery would be an absolutely amazing card in a Winota deck, in which case you may still be playing a bunch of 1 and 2 CMC permanents, and maybe you want to throw Lurrus in the 99. Sorry, Commander.
See, we talk all things, but mostly Commander. Yeah. Right now, Yorian decks feel sometimes like Commander decks.
They do. They do. They're 20 cards short still.
20 cards short still. Yeah, I. You know, we also played against an Alpine Houndmaster deck,
yeah.
Which is the red-white cats and dogs deck.
That was cool.
It was very cool. I know it was still, or it was constructed, so it wasn't draft, but that deck was pretty resilient. Granted, we were playing Shrine, so we were playing a very less aggressive strategy.
Sure.
I think I had all four Teferis in that game. We still lost, right? So we had four Teferis. We got two Shrines online. It was just, but it's a lot of tutoring. They always had seven cards in hand. Yeah. And those cats and dogs that they play are good. And that dog, the Bolt Hound, that swings and gives your other, it has haste to 2/2 and gives your other creatures +1/+0. I feel like that could be one of those like under the radar budget cheap decks that you can build. Sure. That if you were to take them, I know we all forget what this is like, but to FNM in paper.
What?
What is that? If you were to show up to FNM with that, that deck would be totally fine.
Oh, yeah.
That is a super fun deck, and it's tribal.
And it's also red-white. It cares mostly about non-humans, but has some really good humans in there, too. So you could even throw Winota in there.
You could throw Winota. You could throw Winota in. So, yeah, the meta seems pretty cool. I saw some builds that had, it was like Planeswalker Control with the top end was Ugin. Mm-hmm. I was very fortunate to have played during Cons of Tarkir and the whole block. So I've played with Ugin and Standard before. So I said, I want to try some of the other, maybe less popular strategies, maybe.
Sure.
I didn't find a deck built around Niambi, but maybe later we should try and find a legendary build. It seems really weird to blink and discard legendary cards and draw two cards, but who knows? But yeah, so the meta seems like I think there's enough powerful cards in this set that it could change. I hope to see a change, right? Because after we saw the companion mechanic completely changed, and then we saw Fires go away, we lost Karuga decks. Mm-hmm. Yorian decks are the only ones that I still see, because Yorian was cast so late in the game anyway. They were like, well, I don't care if I have to pay 3 to stick it in my hand. I was going to do nothing that turn anyway.
Right.
But, you know, I think we could see some more stuff. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to it.
Sweet.
Next.
Yes.
We have Jumpstart cards. We've got new commanders and reprints.
Yes.
Do you want to start with the reprints?
Let's start with the reprints. Some of the cards, obviously these aren't all the reprints. These are the ones that when we quickly look through them, we're like, oh yeah, that's a really good reprint. Whether it saves some money or if it's just a card that just makes it so the card price doesn't go up anymore in some cases, which is kind of nice. So the first card we'll just quickly mention, you know, Rhystic Study is going to see a reprint. So it's an expensive card. It's good to see another one.
People play it a lot in Commander. So there you go. You can draw your cards and people will hopefully not pay that one for you.
Yeah, they will. They better.
I usually don't, but then I lose. So
so in white, we have Linvala, Keeper of Silence, seeing a reprint. So this is a 3/4 flying angel for 2 white. It says activated abilities of creatures your opponents control can't be activated. So this is like a white oof, if you will.
A white oof. It's a big oof. It's a big oof. I get what you're saying with the collector oof.
Yes. Yeah, a lot of oofs out there prevent activation of like artifacts or enchantments. It's an angel that prevents the activation of creatures. So
yeah,
kind of a hate card, but
sometimes it keeps you alive.
Yeah, and it was a little expensive before, so it's good to see it now.
The next card we have is Scarecrone. Scarecrone is a scarecrow for 1. For 3 generic mana. It's a 1/2 that has pay 1, sack a scarecrow to draw a card. Pay 4, tap, return target artifact creature from your graveyard to the battlefield. This card was very expensive beforehand. You got Reaper King decks. Do you play this in your Shiray deck?
I do play this in Shiray because 1 mana to sack itself and draw a card and it comes right back is nice. There are some people that play it to cheat out like a giant artifact creature.
Yeah, makes sense.
It's not something you can get Blightsteel Colossus or Darksteel Colossus in because when they hit your graveyard, they shuffle back into your library. So it's nothing like overly oppressive with the card, but it only has printed 1 time before this, so it's nice to see another reprint.
I'll do the next one because I know you're excited about the one after that.
I'm excited about all of them, you're right. Okay. I'm very excited.
I am. So I'll talk about Salvala, Heart of the Wilds. If you watched our stream this past week when we streamed on Friday, we had mentioned this was previewed then. Salvala, Heart of the Wilds, really good. It's a 2/3 whenever another creature enters the battlefield. This controller may draw a card if its power is greater than each other creature's power. And then you can pay a green and tap her and add X to your mana pool, where X is the greatest power among creatures you control. Really strong card. Used to be super expensive. Was finally reprinted in Mystery Boosters. Was still like a $30-some card even then.
Yep.
Maybe even 40 at one point. It's being reprinted. I would assume that this is probably going to go down to being maybe a $15 to $20 card now until maybe they're purchased. But ridiculously strong as the commander. Really good in other decks. I think it's just a good reprint to get more of them out and more into people's hands.
Yeah, absolutely amazing card.
Yeah.
We got another mono green card. It's not very well known. People don't play it very often.
Yeah, not much.
No, it's called Crater Hoof Behemoth. this is a 8 CMC creature. So for 5 green, 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 you get a 5/5 hasty beast that says when Crater Hoof Behemoth enters the battlefield, all of your creatures get +X/+X and trample, where X is the number of creatures you control. So it seems okay, right?
It's a win con in all those token decks. It's so good. This was absolutely needed. It was reprinted once in a master set.
Yep.
It needed this. I'd be happy if it happened even one more time.
Yep.
Or two. I mean, whatever. I want everybody to be able to play. And yep. I don't hate losing to Crater Hoof. I just don't.
It's nice. I mean, it closes the game out. It's right. Not a slow win.
Games have to end, people. If Crater Hoof comes out on like turn two, like when we played against the Mono Blue Braids deck,
that's true.
It's not very good.
No, it's not.
It's not very good. I got it out on turn two. The turn after. It might have been like turn four. I think it was two creatures. Yeah, I had nothing happening.
It was a 7/7 haste, which isn't bad. But right. For 8 mana, it is. 7/7 haste, 8 mana is not very good.
Right. So we also have another reprint in the Oracle of Moldiah. This was a very expensive card as well. A 2/2 elf shaman for 4, 3 and a green, that says you may play an additional land on each of your turns. Play with the top card of your library revealed, and you can play lands from the top of your library. Really good.
Yeah, absolutely amazing card. It was like $40 before.
Yep, ramp strategies. It's just solid. It was just not printed very often. So that's, one of the reasons it was there.
Yeah. Next card, we are delving into black. Best color in Magic. So the first one we have is a land. This is a card called Phyrexian Tower. So Phyrexian Tower was originally printed back in the Urza block. And saw its new printing, new art style, and legendary border, because it's a legendary land, all at the same time, in Ultimate Masters. So we're seeing the third printing of this card now.
I think it's like a $15 or $20 card, so this is good.
Yeah, and when I bought it, it was $50, so I lost out a lot. What it does is...
I bought that for you. I remember you said, can you pick that up? They have a copy? I said, yeah, that was a couple years ago. Yeah.
So what it does is it taps for a colorless, or you can tap it and sacrifice a creature to add 2 black to your mana pool. So it's Sack Outlet on a land, which is great. Produces double black mana. Can help you ramp. Super great card.
Right. The next card is Shieldred, Whispering One. We said, well, this is the fourth printing. I don't know if we need to talk about it. And then, we want to talk about cards that were perhaps more expensive. And we didn't realize, still, all of the printings, including the new one, are at $25.
Yeah.
So it's worth it. I'm glad to have it. Shieldred reanimates a creature at your upkeep and makes your opponent sack one at theirs. Yeah. So, really good card.
I mean, the big thing people are talking about from this Shieldred pack, too, is those Phyrexian basic swamps.
Yeah, pretty cool. They're really cool. And they have the Phyrexian text. They don't even say swamp.
Mm-hmm. So, well, they say swamp in Phyrexian.
We assume.
So another black card we want to look at is Rise of the Dark Realms.
Thank you. Yes. This needs to come out.
So it only was printed one time at Mythic Rarity in a core set. I forget which core set
it was. Really?
I believe it's only printed once in a core set.
I didn't realize it was a core set. I thought it was like Innistrad.
I could be mistaken. I was not around for the set.
Well, tell everybody what it does. I'll look it up.
Yeah, so Rise of the Dark Realms is a 9 CMC sorcery, 7 black that says put all creature cards from all graveyards onto the battlefield under your control. Not all creatures from your graveyard, all creatures from all graveyards. So...
Oh, yeah. It was only an M14. I don't know why. It probably thought Innistrad just because it's the Liliana of the Veil. She's in that same outfit, and I just assumed.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the first reprinting of this card ever?
Yes.
Wow. It was $25, and now it's listed around $20.
Yeah. It's only...
Still pretty pricey.
It's only played in Commander. It's played in a lot of decks, though. If you can afford to play it in your deck, it's actually probably a really good include no matter what. As long as you can get to that mana. So,
right,
play it.
Then, the other two just mentions were Reanimate and Exhume. Reanimate brings a creature, puts a target creature from a graveyard onto the battlefield under your control. You lose life equal to its CMC for 1 black. And then Exhume is 1 and a black. Each player reanimates a creature from their graveyard to the battlefield. Both are great. We're happy to see them.
Yeah, Exhume was played in Pauper before. And it was really the only place that it saw play. So, and for that reason, it only had one printing, and I think it was sitting at about $10 a card. So it'll be cheaper now and easy to pick up. Really good in any reanimator deck that has black.
And then the last one that I, we were pretty good with all of our predictions.
We were.
And we met, I think this was last week. I said, if we can just get an Exquisite Blood reprint, which I believe is going to come in Commander Legends. Oh, no, it came now. You want to tell everybody what Exquisite Blood does?
Yeah, it goes infinite with Veto, which is printed in the same pack. Okay, so Exquisite Blood is a 5 CMC artifact, so for 4 and a
enchantment.
So for 4 and a black, you get an enchantment that says whenever an opponent loses life, you gain that much life.
Chef's kiss.
Combo. Black combo. Mono black combo.
We were talking about combo decks before we started recording. We're actually both recording at my house today.
Yes.
We were going to go to Ryan's, but he's not, his studio's under construction right now. So we're recording here, and we were looking at all my decks. And of my commander decks that I built just for the Ravnica Legends, I'm pretty sure all but 2 of them have an infinite combo in them.
Mm-hmm.
They may not win from it. That may not be the only way to win.
Right.
But I think of 3 of them. Three of them have infinite combos as their win con.
Yeah.
So we were talking about who builds more combo decks. I think it's me.
I think you win on that.
I
even though I express my love for combo more.
I think you do. Yeah. I think I just always have it. And I think it's that thing in me where it's like, I need a win con.
Yeah.
So I just throw an infinite in. It's like, if this can't happen, I've got this to fall back on. And then I think I always end up winning with that.
Yeah. Well, but I mean, that's the win con. That's the one where, you know, no one can interrupt it, or it's interrupting. It's not so easy to interrupt or whatever. I mean,
right.
When you're building a creature deck, you don't go, oh, I have to put a win con in here. It's like, I have creatures. They have power. My opponents have life totals. We're going to try to get to 0.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So those are the reprints that we're looking forward to and we're happy are being reprinted. If there's any that are being reprinted that we didn't talk about, tweet at us. Tell us what you're excited to see reprinted. I personally think Jumpstart, okay. Did you expect Jumpstart to be this kind of product?
No.
No.
I expected Jumpstart to be goblins versus dogs and everything was common.
Honestly, I expected like dual deck level power, right? You've got like one really cool card mm-hmm. that's going to end up being like $7, mm-hmm. right? Because you've got like those dual deck, like the, we talked about the mono red Chandra from the Chandra deck.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Did anyone expect Exquisite Blood to be in this and Selvala and Craterhoof and Aura? I did not anticipate. If you had asked me, I would have bet you $100. I was like, well, it'll be like a regular set, 6 or 7 cool cards. This has a ton.
Yeah, how about 10 brand new legendaries?
And we haven't even talked about those. So that was a really good segue.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure was.
We're pretty good at segues.
2 wheels, lean forward, goes forward.
Have you ever ridden a Segway?
No, I have not.
I really want to.
After I learned about the owner or CEO or president of Segway falling off a cliff and dying on a Segway, I have been scared of Segways. But then I found out the original inventor...
Is that real?
It's real. The original inventor of Segway, Dean Kamen, ended up selling the company to this guy that fell off a cliff on a Segway.
Was it... That's really awful.
It's awful. It's awful. And that's what I think about all the time.
Was it... Wow. I've never been on a Segway.
Maybe you won't want to.
Maybe
now.
I won't want to. But I do picture those on like the hover around commercials now that yes. ride up to the edge of the Grand Canyon.
Hover around.
You know what I'm talking about?
Absolutely. I used to watch Price is Right all the time.
good stuff. Well, now that we've talked about our segue, let's move into these new legendary commanders that we want to talk about. We're not going to go into too in depth with all of them.
No.
But let's start with the one that was related to my, you know, to my intro. We've got a new Minotaur here. So I'm going to go like way out of order because we kind of already alluded to it.
You like the Minotaur though. You can talk about the Minotaur.
So, you know, we've already had, right? We've already had a black-red Minotaur that could have been the commander. It came from Amonkhet, right?
Yes.
So it was... Neheb the Worthy. And it gave... It was a Hellbent commander, right? If you had no cards in hand, your Minotaurs got +2/+0.
If you had no cards in hand, your Minotaurs got +1/+0 in First Strike, I believe it was. Or it was Menace. Menace sounds more Minotaur.
So it says, other Minotaurs have First Strike. It has First Strike as long as you have one or fewer cards. So not Hellbent.
Okay.
One or fewer. Minotaurs get +2/+0 whenever it deals damage to a player. Each player discards a card.
Okay. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Rakdos, kind of Minotaurs matter, but only in certain scenarios.
But now we have Sethron, Herloon Minotaur, Herloon General. 3 red. It's a 4/4. When it or another non-token Minotaur enters the battlefield under your control, create a 2/3 red Minotaur creature token. Fun fact, I was looking it up. I believe this is the second card that makes the 2/3 red Minotaur creature token. There was a card that was like a sorcery that made, I think, two of them. So now we have this. And then it says pay two and then hybrid red or black. Minotaurs get +1/+0 and menace and haste until end of turn. So tribal... color me happy.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm all about this. I love tribal decks. I love token decks. I love activations.
And now you love Minotaurs.
And well, you know what's so funny is we talked about doing Pauper Commander before in our Discord channel, and I talked about Kragma Warcaller, which is the black red that gives your other Minotaurs, I think it's +2/+0 in haste or something like that. Mm-hmm. I forget. And I was like, this seems really fun, even better than Neheb.
Sure.
Now I have almost what feels like that because it gives them haste, and I can activate to give it power, and it's actually legal.
And it makes 2/3s.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good.
It or another non-token Minotaur enters. So you've got, it feels like each Minotaur is two now. It's just really good. I'm ready to play this. Send me all your builds for Sethron.
If your build does not include Didgeridoo, scrap it. Start over. Number one card.
Didgeridoo, Sethron. Don't send me your list.
You add Sethron, you add Didgeridoo, then you start your list.
Didgeridoo right. is a good joke always.
It always is.
All right, who you want to talk about? Who are we talking about next?
Well,
and we're going to, like we said, we're talking about these briefly, but we'll probably do deck techs or we'll go more in depth and maybe do a commander build on these.
Sure. I know that you personally want to build a mono black deck. I don't want to talk about this next commander. I want you to talk about that commander when we go to it.
Okay.
But I just need to tell that's why I'm not jumping to Tiny Bones.
I got the little bones.
I want to talk about Xurzoth, Chaos Rider.
Why you got to be like that?
You need to talk about Tiny Bones because you need to learn an appreciation.
Okay. All right, fine. You tell us about Xurzoth.
So Xurzoth Chaos Rider, he's a little complicated. He is a devil. He's a, for two and a red, you get a legendary 2/3 devil that says whenever an opponent draws their first card each turn, if it's not their turn, you create a 1/1 red devil creature token with when this creature dies, it deals one damage to any target. Whenever one or more devils you control attack one or more players, you and those players each draw a card, then discard a card at random.
Random.
Yeah. So that part's maybe not the nicest thing in the world, but...
That gets people to play fair when they're playing tutors.
I really like this card. When I first saw it, I was messaging Andy about it. I said, mono red group hug. I can activate Temple Bell on every other person's turn and make 3 devils. That sounds awesome, especially with like a Purphoros out that's doing 2 damage every time the devil comes out.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah, or...
Well, I didn't know it did that.
Or Altar of the Brood, and you can mill people out in mono red with all of these 1/1s. So I think a 3-mana token generator that revolves around your opponent's drawing cards, especially if you can make your opponent's loot and discard at random... it is very chaos-y, but I think it does have some very streamlined win conditions amongst that chaos.
And people are already doing all of these things in Commander.
Yeah.
They're drawing cards. This is great.
Yeah. So
I explained that they already do these, and I gave you one example of things they do.
Yeah, they can draw cards.
They can draw cards.
Yeah.
So, cool.
On their turn.
Great input, turns. Andy. You really added a lot to this conversation.
Oh, man.
Ooh.
But you're not wrong either.
Yeah. So Xurzoth is really fun. If you're building, by the way, at the end of this, if you're building any of these, send us all of your builds. We want to know what you're building. And again, if you're also a patron, send us your commander deck list. We would love to feature them as commander of the week. So
absolutely.
If you have any of these. All right. So because you already led me into it, let's talk about, you know, a mono black deck, right? So we talked about this. We talked about it, I think, a few times on the podcast, right? I picked up Year of the Rat and I said, no, I don't want to do Year of the Rat. Maybe I'll do Veto. You know, I think that was just 2 weeks ago we had this conversation.
Yep.
Maybe I don't do Veto. Maybe I do Tiny Bones, mm-hmm. the Trinket Thief. Mm-hmm. So for a 1/2 for one and a black at the beginning of each end step, if an opponent discard a card, you draw a card and lose a life. drawing cards is the best thing I can do in Magic. It's my favorite thing. Mm-hmm. Losing life, not really my jam.
It's a resource.
But I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out. And then it has pay 4 black. Each opponent with no cards in hand loses 10 life. The struggle here is you're forcing people to do something that makes a game unfun, right? So you're making people discard cards. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you gotta try everything once, right? I mean, like, I'd build this to try it out. I don't think I've ever played against a deck that forced me to discard. Like, you do say that you have it in Shire.
Yes.
But I personally have never been oppressed by that discard strategy. I did watch a game where you played it 1v1 against our buddy. Yes. And they had no cards in hand, and you could do it at instant speed, so they would draw, and then you made them discard it before their next,
before their main phase. Yeah.
And that was quite sad. I shed a tear for our friend.
Yeah.
I said, good luck.
Yeah, he lost that game because he couldn't play spells.
Yeah, so that's the only thing holding me back from this. I think people would rather lose to a combo with Vito Exquisite Blood than Tiny Bones forcing them to discard. And if I don't have a win con or a way to turn the game, you know, or end the game soon, they're not going to have fun.
Sure.
So that's my only thought. But I think this is a really cool, I think it's a really neat ability to have on a commander.
Yeah, and it's definitely going to see play in like wheels decks and stuff, because it does say at the beginning of each end step, if an opponent discarded a card. So, you know, you can play it in fair discard decks as part of the 99 and maybe not the commander. Or if you're only using it to just get that extra couple card draw or something, you know, you play a bottomless pit that says at the beginning of each player's upkeep, they have to discard a card, and they're only discarding one card per turn. I think that is a more enjoyable strategy. Makes people think about what card they're going to discard, what cards they're going to keep. But making someone discard their hand, yeah, typically that's not so fun. Mind Slicer is the one thing I can think of.
And I had that in my Hapatra deck, and yeah. I don't think I do anymore. That's the one where you can...
When it dies, each player discards their hand.
Oh, no. I have it was the other one where you can sack a creature and target opponent discards.
Sadistic Hypnotist.
And I think that used to be in it, or I pulled it out, or I just haven't seen it because I don't play that deck often. But that, you know, when you get a ton of snakes, it can be too oppressive.
Yep.
So it's just not fun to play with.
That was in my Shire deck. I would make it so everyone had no hand size. You can only activate Sadistic Hypnotist at sorcery speed, which is good. Actually makes that card somewhat balanced. That's an unfun card. It's been around for a while, but it does work.
Right. Do you want to tell us about a new creature that might belong in one of your commander decks that you currently have? Or
I guess he's a little expensive on the mana side, if I'm being 100% honest.
Oh, but I agree. It is.
So this is Muxus Goblin Grandee. He is a 6 mana 4/4. So for 4 red, you get a Goblin Noble. This says, when Muxus Goblin Grandee enters the battlefield, reveal the top 6 cards of your library, put all goblin creature cards with converted mana cost 5 or less from among them onto the battlefield, and the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. When Muxus attacks, it gets +1/+1 until end of turn for each other goblin you control. Let me tell you right now that last line of text is pointless if you're building this deck. Muxus Goblin Grandee, I believe, put it on the board, is now the strongest mono-red goblin commander in existence.
Aside from its CMC, or just you think it is?
No, I think it is by itself. It's part of a 2-card combo, the other one being Goblin Recruiter. And Goblin Recruiter has an Enter the Battlefield effect that says you can search your library for any number of goblins and put them on the top of your library in any order. So Goblin Recruiter to go search for the 6 goblins that you could think of to make a combo. Let me tell you, it only takes about 3 goblins to make that combo.
Well, we've got Conspicuous, you know, Nosy Neighbor, Conspicuous Snoop.
Conspicuous Snoop can use the activated abilities of cards on the top of your library, so you can even have an extra safety and put 7 cards on the top of your library, where the 7th card is your Kiki Jiki Mirror Breaker, and you have your Snoop out so that you can use your Kiki Jiki's activated ability with your Snoop. Honestly, this is not a joke. Muxus Goblin Grandee is my pick for the next best mono-red goblin commander.
You heard it here, folks.
It's on the board.
And if it's bad, tweet at him at Wormcoil Engine and tell him how wrong he is. All right, so one that I have really taken to, because I don't have a deck with this strategy at all, and also I learned about the lore of this commander, is Bruvac, the Grand Eloquent. a 1/4 legendary human advisor. Uh-huh. It's an advisor. Uh-oh. If an opponent would mill, keyworded, would mill one or more cards, they mill twice that many cards instead. Being an advisor, you can play... You want to tell everybody what that card name is? It's Persistent Petitioners.
Yeah, which is also an advisor.
And it cares about...
It cares about milling.
Milling with advisors.
Yes, it sure does.
So, Bruvac is a mono blue mill strategy. Now, I don't know if you lose a ton from not having black. You know, there are some black cards, but I feel like this is great. But I will tell you, I have run into enough decks that run just because they have one copy of one of the OG Eldrazi.
Sure.
And I don't believe your deck can beat them, but that's okay. Not every deck can beat everything.
Well, an important part, if you're going to run mill and your meta does include this, is to include one or two artifacts that can instantaneously exile a card from someone's graveyard so that they can only do it once.
Sure. But I think this is a real deck.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's going to be really... You know, I don't hate being milled because I usually have something in my graveyard that can... It's either got flashback, it could be cast in the graveyard, it likes being thrown into the grave, whatever it is. I have enough decks with cards that... But I don't hate mill strategies.
No.
Come at me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm curious to know if this is going to beat out Phoenix for mill. Phoenix has like over 1,000 decks on EDH Rec right now.
Yeah.
So this could take a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
I also have already seen the spike in Persistent Petitioners.
Yes.
It's expected. People already were playing Persistent Petitioners with Grand Arbiter Augustine.
Mm-hmm.
They were playing them. But this one could not be more fitting for a Persistent Petitioners deck.
Definitely agree.
You've got that, you know, you've got your Rats deck, your Relentless Rats decks, you've got Persistent Petitioners decks, you've got your, what is your cleric? The demon one.
Yeah, the Shadowborn Apostle.
Shadowborn, you know, this is another.
Yes.
But it may feel a little boring because of that.
Mm.
But you don't have to build it that way. You certainly don't. But Coyle, you were bringing up some interesting cards that work really well with Bruvac,
yeah.
Like Sphinx's Tutelage.
Yeah, so two cards, Grindstone and Sphinx's Tutelage, have been I always want to say redacted, but that's the removal of knowledge.
Errated.
They've been errated to say mill rather than Sphinx's Tutelage and Grindstone both say put the top two cards of target player's library into their graveyard. Then if they share a color, you repeat the process. So those have been errated to say mill. So with this legendary creature out, you're actually going to mill four cards rather than two. And then if any of those four cards share a color, you repeat the process. So it actually makes those particular mill strategies, which Grindstone's colorless, Sphinx's Tutelage is blue, it makes those strategies much more viable, much more easy to just like combo and it wins immediately. But to kind of combat the thing that you said earlier, Andy, about blue-black, so a card like Mind Grind that says, you know, target opponent reveals cards until they reveal a certain card and then they put those cards in the graveyard, those have not been errated to mill.
Right. Makes sense.
So mono blue mill is what's seeing the biggest jump. Whether or not this card being included in the 99 of blue black will make blue black decks that much better, or if mono blue will finally take over mill, that'll be the question.
I'm really interested, and the whole reason that I really like this is because Bruvac is part of the Azorius Senate.
Boo!
Is a judge.
Boo!
Ravnica.
Boo!
Best plane in existence.
Yep.
So. All right. You're the worst.
I just can't say
it's not Almond
anymore.
Cats. It's not Almond Cats, but it's my favorite, okay? It's my favorite. Let's do one more.
Okay.
Who do you want to talk about?
Are we both doing one more, or are we doing one more collectively?
You got it. You pick one of these last four. So we've got four here. Inaz, Naeth, Jolrael, and Emil. Who do you want to talk about?
I mean, I know
we're running out of time, so I just want to make sure we have enough time to get through.
I know you
want to
talk about Emil, but I want to talk about Emil too.
Let's both talk about Emil. Have you heard of Emil?
Emil, not something you would eat three of every day.
Uh-huh. It's a unicorn.
Is actually a unicorn. And it is a white unicorn for two white. You get a 4/4 that says you can pay 3 generic to exile another creature you control, then return it to the battlefield under its owner's control.
So tell me, is that blink or is that flicker?
We looked it up before this.
So we did.
Yes.
So what were the terms we got? Okay, so we got slow blink and long blink.
Slow blink and long blink. We have flicker and long flicker, I believe, or delayed flicker.
There was like quick flicker, insta flicker.
Yeah. We're just trying to figure out which one's blink, which one's flicker, if it comes back right away or end of the turn. And it turns out, yes.
They appear. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you've got, no one knows. Who knows?
So
we couldn't find it through Google or Wikipedia or anything. It appears that if you exile it and bring it back, regardless of when it comes back, it might not necessarily matter. So we're going to call it Blicker.
Is that what we're going to do?
I was hoping you were going to say Blink at the same time, and it would have been really funny, but it didn't happen.
I was just going like, I don't even know which one we're going to call. The example I brought up is there's a sorcery called Flicker that says exile target creature, then return to the battlefield under its owner's control. And then there's an enchantment called Flicker Form, which is an aura that says you can pay 2 white-white and exile the creature and it returns at the end step. So it's 2 different cards with the word flicker in them that literally do the 2 different ways you can flicker or blink a card. But anyway,
just call it Flickin' Unicorn.
This Flickin' Unicorn over here
also does something else.
Yeah, so whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay either a green or a white, so hybrid. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on it. If it's a unicorn, put 2 +1/+1 counters on it instead.
Tribal.
Honestly, I don't think this card's going to be played as tribal, like, barely at all. There's not enough unicorns out there.
I mean, there's a lot of unicorns.
I think this is going to be a green-white blink deck, and people are going to throw a couple of unicorns in there just for the synergy.
Of course.
But 3 generic mana to blink a creature is ridiculous. I mean, that's 3 generic blink with all of the ETB creatures that we have in existence. Maybe not only in green-white, but like we have Dockside Extortionist, which is 1 and a red. When it enters the battlefield, you get a treasure for each artifact and enchantment your opponents control. If you have Emil in the 99 along with a Dockside Extortionist, it can very potentially go infinite and produce infinite amount of mana. on top of, you know, using Emil with an Avenger of Zendikar. Blinker, Avenger of Zendikar, get a bunch more saplings. Maybe you have a Phyrexian altar out there, so you can just sack 3 of the saplings for the mana that you need to activate a meal. In fact, you only need Ashnod's altar. It's not even colored mana.
But if that Avenger of Zendikar comes in, if you have enough mana, you're going to put so many counters on those things right away.
You can, if you want.
Because it doesn't matter about whether or not they're non-token.
That's right.
You just make all those things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think I'd play this as a unicorn deck. I didn't think about all those other possibilities, but I mean, like, there's cards in Jumpstart here. I don't know. This card seems really good and probably one of the strongest,
if not the strongest,
Selesnya commander, because it's not just tokens. It's not just life gain. This is doing other things, but this can be put into like a rune deck too.
For sure. I'm going to be putting this. I'm honestly replacing every copy of Flicker Form I have in a deck with Emil.
What does Flicker Form cost?
Flicker Form costs 2 mana as an aura and then 4 mana to activate. 2 white-white to activate.
So this is 4 and then 3 mana to activate.
3 generic comes back right away. Flicker Form enters at the end step.
Fair enough.
So I'm going to put it in Morophon. I'm going to blink my Morophon to make it a different creature type. Put out another creature type.
That's really neat.
I'm excited.
That's really cool. That's really cool.
Yeah,
so
super good card. It's going to see a lot of play.
We know there's a few other commanders that we didn't go over, but we're running out of time this week.
Yes.
We want to make sure that we get to Commander of the Week. So we'll have to cover these on our next episode. And like we said, we'll probably start doing some deck building streams. We also are looking at doing some live deck building streams.
Yeah.
We've seen quite a few people doing these. They seem super fun. We've set up everything on OBS, so look forward to that. That is going to happen soon. But we have Commander of the Week, and you just played a deck with Tetsuko Umezawa Fugitive. Tell us about your mono blue deck.
Yes.
Monster.
I built a mono blue deck, and I'm not sorry. Well, I'm not sorry about this one. I am sorry about the last one.
Which one was the last one?
Gingataxius core auger.
Oh, you know, it cost too much and I didn't feel like I got hit by that, but one time.
Yeah,
but...
I played it once. Everyone had to discard their hands. I still lost the game. It was awful.
But this was much better. So yes. Tell us about this.
So Tetsuko Umezawa Fugitive is a 2-mana 1/3 uncommon commander from Dominaria. So for one and a blue, you get a 1/3 human rogue that says creatures you control with power or toughness one or less cannot be blocked. So what this deck is trying to do is get a bunch of either 1x creatures or x1 creatures on the battlefield that are unblockable, that do things when they swing in. A majority of them draw cards. So we have some really good draw card synergy, but we're going to play creatures like Eternal of Harsh Truths from Hour of Devastation. It's 3-mana 1/3 with Afflict 2. Says whenever it attacks and isn't blocked, draw a card. So it's going to be unblockable. But we also are playing some creatures that have like a large power and low toughness. So Frostwalker is 1 and a blue. You get a 4/1 that says when it becomes the target of a spell or ability, sacrifice it. So if someone wants to, you know, use one of their targeted removal to remove my 2-mana 4/1, they're more than welcome to. But it will be sneaking in for 4 damage every single turn, unblockable. As we learned, and if you watch the VOD for game one, there is a card that is above the rest, as it seems.
Oh my gosh.
So for Modern Horizons, we have a 3-mana Naga Ninja called Mist Syndicate Naga. It has ninjutsu for 2 and a blue, which means if a creature is attacking, you can ninjutsu out a ninjutsu creature to bounce that creature back to your hand, and you put the ninjutsu creature out. I actually didn't use it this way. I was going to, but I didn't use it this way.
Because there's no reason to. I saw what it does.
No, because my commander was killed the turn before. That's why. So when Mist Syndicate Naga deals combat damage to a player, create a token that's a copy of Mist Syndicate Naga. So every time your 3-1, your unblockable 3-1 gets in for damage, you create another unblockable 3-1. And when someone casts a second harvest, you're going to Narset to Reversal that second harvest, and you're going to have like 40 unblockable power to swing on.
Yeah, no, turn. For real though. How many did you have at one point? You had like 16 or something like that, right?
I think 12 was the highest I got, because I swung at you, I think, with 16 and lost 8. Or I swung one turn, yeah, I swung with 16,
because
lost 8.
Because what I did was I removed your commander, so we were all able to block. Yes. But not enough to not just die.
I swung with 16, lost 8, but 8 got in for damage, so I made 8 more 3-1s.
That card is ridiculous. It's so really good. So good.
So some of the cards maybe that you haven't heard of before that are going to belong in this deck, we have Scare Tiller, which is actually from some of the recent commander sets. For 4 mana, you get a 1/4 artifact creature Scarecrow. This says whenever Scare Tiller becomes tapped, choose one. You may put a land card from your hand onto the battlefield tapped, or return target land card from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. And so since this deck revolves around so much card draw, Scare Tiller is actually really good to get some of the extra lands out of your hand, or if you have to discard down to hand size because you don't have a no maximum hand size card, which you do play all three of, or shouldn't say all three, you play 3 of the cards. There is a creature I could play too, which I'm not playing. But when you have to discard down to hand size at the end of your end step, you may be discarding some lands. So it's a way to actually get those lands to work. And it's a 1/4 that has to be tapped to activate it. So you can swing with it and it'll be unblockable in your deck. Some of the namesake cards that we have to play in here. So by namesake, I really only mean one card, and that's Umezawa's Jitte.
Sure.
Since we are playing someone in the Umezawa family, we're going to play Umezawa.
It's a grandfather.
It's ancestor.
Ancestor.
So Toshiro Umezawa is the ancestor of Tetsuko, and that's all I know from the flavor text on Tetsuko Umezawa.
Interesting. Okay.
But the main strategy for the deck, other than killing people with all these unblockable 3-1s, which wasn't technically what I built the deck to do, is to mill your opponent. So I do play Sphinx's Tutelage. It says whenever you draw a card, target player puts the top 2 cards of their library into their graveyard. Now Errata to mills the top 2 cards of their library. If those cards share a color, they repeat the process. So I will be including the brand new 1/4 blue human advisor from Jumpstart into this deck once it becomes available. But with that Sphinx's Tutelage out, it makes some of my artifacts and enchantments that allow me to draw even more cards than my creatures like Scroll Thief that say when it deals combat damage, you draw a card. Cards like Biden of Thassa, We have Coastal Piracy, and we have the brand new one, the brand new enchantment from Ikoria, which is Reconnaissance Mission. So all of them cost 4 mana, 2 blue-blue. It says whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, you may draw a card. So hopefully I'm swinging with 6 creatures and I'm drawing 18 cards and making all of my opponents mill for a ton. Psychic Corrosion is another one of those cards. Whenever you draw a card, each opponent mills 2 cards in their library. I throw a Windfall in here. If I have a 30-card hand, I'm going to Windfall it away and hopefully mill everyone out. But other than that, you know, I play a lot of just like standard blue cards, Narset's Reversal, Muddle the Mixture, Dig Through Time, Cyclonic Rift. I was quote unquote forced to put an Aetherize in here because there were some cards I wanted copies of that my LGS didn't have. But yeah, it's actually been a super, super fun deck. It's not oppressive at all.
Nope, not at all.
So I look forward to playing with it more. And for our next build, which will be Common, Uncommon, Pauper Commanders.
Yes.
Non-legendary.
We are trying to figure out the non-legendary commanders we're playing, and I'm thinking I might go with like a Risen Reef.
Mm-hmm.
Elementals.
Seems good.
Seems really fun. You know, we'll see. Anyway, that's the end of our episode this week. Thank you all for listening. If you want to contact us, you can find our podcast on Twitter at GuardianPod. You can find me on Twitter at ATFlurry.
You can find me on Twitter at WormCoilEngine.
And you can also email us at GuardianProjectPod@gmail.com. If you're on Discord and you're interested, let us know. We mentioned that earlier. Send us a message and we'll get you into the discussion. Thanks everybody, and have a nice week.
Have a wonderful week.
Have a wonderful week.
Times, weekends, weeks. When are you listening to this?
What is time anymore?
Are you mowing the lawn listening to this right now? Because if your name's Mike Coyle, that's probably true.
You know, there are some podcasts where when I go to mow the lawn, their audio is not loud enough and I can't listen to them. And I have to listen to other things because I cannot hear them.
Can that be one of the tags for our podcast, loud enough to listen to while mowing the lawn?